Welcome back, my dear friend. My guest today is Dr. Rana, who is a biochemist famous around the world. We're so glad that you're with us, Dr. Rana.
It's a pleasure to be here, Pastor Carter.
We appreciate what you're doing. We appreciate what you're saying. Now, we're talking today about making life, artificial life in the lab, maybe from taking life forms and manipulating those life forms. But there's even a science now that is trying desperately to take atoms, chemicals, work them, and those things are dead, and work those things together. They haven't done this yet by any means, but work those things together so they can say, wacko, look at this. We have actually created something which is living.
Yes.
But the message I'm getting from you, whatever they're doing, you've got intelligent beings who are doing this.
That's exactly right.
Mm.
Yes. And
not just happening by itself.
That's exactly right. And so even though some people might think that this type of research is replacing God or making God unnecessary, the irony is that it's actually demonstrating, I think, empirically, unequivocally, that if you don't have intelligent agency involved, life can't come from non-life. Mm. And that, as a Christian, is very exciting to me.
Atheists tell us, you know, that we're a product of time plus matter plus chance, that everything just happened by itself. No intelligence there, no God there. But we're talking actually about super brains, human brains, working together, as you said, standing on the shoulders of great scientists that go back to Newton and further back. And they're manipulating with incredibly complex machines, trying to make something that replicates life. But it's not just happening by itself. But let me ask you this question. Is there a danger in this? Is this the brave new world where people are going to create monstrosities or catastrophes of a biblical proportion? Are we going too far? Are scientists going too far in trying to play God? What do you think?
Well, I think that that's a very important question that has to be asked and continued to be asked. Is this safe? What are the ramifications? Mm. Have we studied what we're doing enough to understand how these artificial life forms, these non-natural life forms, going to behave if they're outside the laboratory? Right now, at this particular point in time, the work is safe because the entities that they're developing from the bottom up are pretty fragile. They don't last very long. They're not real stable. The artificial life forms that are being created in the lab from the top down are utterly dependent upon the lab environment to survive and the researchers maintaining them.
Very fragile, isn't it? Artificial.
Yeah. Right. So right now, it's safe. And to the credit of the scientists who are doing this work, they have been consulting bioethicists and biosafety people to make sure that as they proceed, they're taking reasonable precautions. But as we move beyond this initial stage to the idea that these things may somehow escape the lab and become more robust, who knows how they're going to behave? So safety is a concern.
So the fear is that some of these things that are being made or manipulated or added on to existing life forms, the fear is that one of these things could get out the window.
Sure. And once it's in the environment, who knows if it'll die or if it'll suddenly start doing things and impacting the environment or the ecosystem in a way that we would never have anticipated. So these are big unknowns.
Yeah.
But again, the good news is that there are people who are doing this work who are aware that these are concerns and are trying their best to address them. But this is why I think as Christians, we need to be aware of what the science is, be aware of what scientists are trying to do, and have an educated, informed voice so that we can help direct the technology in the appropriate direction that we can ensure that there's the proper safeguards in place.
And there's no virtue in ignorance.
No, there's not.
You know, we hear the old saying that what you don't know can't hurt you. Well, it can hurt you.
Right.
We need to be intelligently informed. Now,
But you know, this is like any technology. Mm. For example, nuclear power can be be put to horrible ends, yes. Or it can perhaps be the way that rescues us from an energy crisis.
Or I know that there's a place outside Sydney where they make stuff for radioactive stuff for the treatment of cancer.
Yes.
And so people's lives have been saved in this way. And this is done, of course, in the States. When you talk about safeguards for this brave new world, what about countries that don't have the same ethics that we have here in the United States or in Australia or Great Britain?
And again, that's a real concern. Mm. So I don't want to minimize, as excited as I am about the prospects of creating life in the lab, we don't want to minimize those potential concerns. Mm. Right now, the technology is so sophisticated to do what has even been done that you're not going to get people in a garage doing this. But I think in the near future, that is going to be a possibility because the techniques are going to be more broadly understood.
Goodness.
More people are going to be trained.
Yeah.
The expense of doing it is going to be reduced. Operations are going to become more turnkey. And at that point, there's a real concern that this could be uncontrolled. But again, it's like any other technology. Mm. In the wrong hands, even good technology can be put to bad use. So we have to be active in terms of how we police this, how we regulate this, make sure that our voices are heard in an informed way and in a respected way.
You see, you're telling me lots of stuff today that I know nothing about. And I guess many of the people who are watching the television program, they're saying, boy, we never knew any of this, but maybe it's time you and I got to know this. Because I come again, Fuzz, to the idea that there are countries that are almost terrorist states.
Yes.
They'd love to have the atom bomb, the hydrogen bomb, and nuke us because of their philosophies. But this could become more dangerous than the hydrogen bomb.
That's the very real potential. So I'm not concerned about people who are trying to use the technology for good purposes.
No.
But the concern, again, would be people who have evil motives and evil intents.
And we live in an evil world because of sin.
We definitely do.
Which is another great reason why we need Christ.
Yes, exactly.
Because without God, there's no such thing as good.
Yeah.
You know, no God, no good.
Yeah, that's right. And so to me, as a Christian, I'm excited about this. I see this technology being a way for us to be better stewards of the planet, to help people who are sick, to love our neighbors as ourselves. And I even think that the fact that scientists can create life in the lab, not only is it, I think, a powerful argument for the need of a creator to bring life into existence, but it's also a powerful argument that we as human beings are made in God's image. You know, because if we are made in God's image, we are many creators. And so every time we create, we invent, the image of God is being manifested.
And these are new ideas to me.
And so when
you're unsettling the molecules of my mind, and probably the molecules of some of the listeners who are watching this program.
Well, it's a different way to think about this.
Yes, it is. We need to think.
And if God made life, it's only a matter of time before we make life.
Did you know some churches, I've been told, not this church, not your church, none of the churches of the people who are watching this television program, they have boxes at the doors of some churches, certainly not in America. And they have a little sign up that says, check your brains in at the door. And it does seem to some people that some people who profess the name of Christianity are afraid of thinking.
Yeah.
They have become so traditional and they live in such a little box. It's good for us to think big thoughts and new thoughts, even if we don't agree with everything.
Yes.
If scientists, using all of their technology and all of the wisdom of hundreds and hundreds, thousands of years, were able one day to make life in the laboratory, artificial life or something new and amazing, does this make, in your opinion as a scientist, God unnecessary?
Oh, I think it means that God is absolutely necessary because, again,
I would think so, to save us.
Yes. Well, he's necessary in the sense that it's demonstrating that intelligent agents are mm-hmm. needed to bring life into existence. I think the only reason why scientists can even entertain the idea of creating life in the lab is because they're made in God's image mm-hmm. and they have this creativity that is part of the image of God. At least that's how I would understand it. And that's being manifested. And so God creates life. We as humans too can create life because we have that image of God in us. But it's all about your attitude before the Creator. If you do it with an attitude that acknowledges God exists, mm-hmm. acknowledges that good mm-hmm. things come from Him, that you respect Him, that you worship Him, when you're making life in the lab, it brings God glory, if you think about it in those terms. Mm-hmm. But if you are opposed to that which is good, if you are opposed to the Creator, then it's mm-hmm. something that could be viewed as an assault mm-hmm. against God. So it's all the attitude and the worldview perspective that you bring to the activity that makes it, I think, good or evil.
Do you think a man like Richard Dawkins, I'm not criticizing him by any means. I don't know enough to criticize such a great scientist. I know that he is a militant atheist.
Yes, he is.
I know he has no time for the Bible. He ridicules the God of the Old Testament. He ridicules Jesus Christ. And he talks about issues where he ought to be silent. He's certainly not a theologian. He's not a philosopher. And I've read some of his arguments, and I think some of his arguments are extremely weak. I think they're shallow. I think they're false. And I think he's very emotional, an emotional atheist. There must be other people like Richard Dawkins who are in these laboratories who have the idea that if they can somehow create some type of life form, simple or complex, then it shows that the Bible story that tells us that in the beginning there was a creator, God created the heavens and the earth, this is not so. Would you think some scientists have that motive?
Yes, I think that there is a group of scientists that do indeed have that motivation.
Desperate.
Yeah, that they are trying to explain life mm-hmm. and life's beginning, life's genesis, apart from a creator. And they look at this type of work as meaning that life isn't special mm-hmm. or that if we can make life in the lab, then surely it could have originated on Earth all on its own. Mm. But again, there's an irony in this because those are the same scientists who I think are doing some of the most sophisticated work in terms of bringing about the creation of life in the lab.
And they're intelligent beings.
Yeah, and they're never going to deny that they're not intelligent mm-hmm. or that they're not genius or they're not clever in what they're doing. So in a sense, this argument for the creator kind of boxes them into a corner, so to speak, because you, in a sense, are complimenting their efforts and pointing out how brilliant their work is. And so are they going to deny their brilliance and deny the very real sophistication of their work? If they do, then it minimizes their accomplishments. And if they don't, then I think it makes the case that you need an intelligent agent. So
I'm talking to Dr. Ranner. We're talking about life in the laboratory. Will scientists make life in the laboratory? It seems they're getting close. Now, I want to say to the young people who are watching who go to universities, you need to listen up because this is tremendously important because we're dealing here with tremendous issues that give us evidence to believe in a creator God. Now, for people who've just tuned into this program, Dr. Ranner, you talked about life coming down from above in the laboratories and trying to make life up from the basement. For those who've tuned in, tell us about what they're doing particularly in trying to make life coming down from above. Tell us about this again.
Yeah, and again, though they may use the term that they're creating life in the lab or creating artificial life, it's really a better way to understand it is that they're re-engineering life that already exists. They're modifying it. They're altering it using materials that are already present in nature itself. There's very little true invention going on.
Yeah, so that's not that impressive.
On one hand, it's not impressive, but on the other hand, in terms of the technical nature of their accomplishment, it's incredibly impressive.
Uh-huh.
So it's remarkable and unremarkable at the same time.
But it's a bit like it's a bit like getting a Cadillac motor car or a Mercedes Benz. You've got the basic car, and then you modify it so it becomes a racing machine.
Yes.
It's modifying it, isn't it?
Exactly. And there's a certain amount of genius it takes to do that modification.
It does. Mm-hmm.
But at the end of the day, you still have an automobile, and you simply have altered an existing design.
Yes. But what we're also talking about today is that scientists seem to be on the verge. This is what you were saying, on the very edge of so manipulating chemicals and atoms and molecules that are dead, that have got no life at all, and getting these things to have the capacity of having some life-like characteristics.
Exactly.
Or more.
Exactly. And that would be, again, work from the bottom up. And, for example, there's a scientist at Harvard, Jack Szostak, who has figured out how to build a membrane and a boundary and put inside that boundary molecules that can not truly divide on their own or replicate on their own.
A membrane.
Yes.
Like the membrane, a membrane around a cell.
Yes, exactly.
Because a cell is encapsulated, isn't it?
Exactly. And he can get that membrane by adding the right compounds to grow larger and larger, and eventually it will divide into two. So there's a growth and division process that he's able to do, and he can incorporate molecules.
Did he start with a life form?
No, he's starting now with molecules to do this. But he's taking all of his clues to do this from how living organisms work. So on one hand, he is creating these very interesting systems.
He's thinking God's thoughts after him.
Exactly.
Didn't Newton say that?
Exactly.
Who said that?
I think it might have.
You're not sure.
Scientist. I'm not sure who said that.
I'm just a poor old pastor who knows nothing about it.
Yeah, well, you know, you've got me on that one. I'm not sure. I've heard that before.
I don't know who it was. Somebody's going to write it and they're going to tell us. But he said in his lab, he was simply thinking God's thoughts after him.
Yeah.
So this man has been able to make a membrane.
Yeah.
And that holds in these atoms and so forth.
Yeah. And he can get it to grow and divide.
I'm amazed.
Yeah. So it's an incredible accomplishment.
Well, is it alive?
That's a good question. You know, what's interesting is biologists can't define what life is. That was something that actually got me interested in becoming a biochemist. Is my first biology class, going to class and
course. Well, let me ask you. You're a biochemist. What is life?
Well, in a physical sense, it's really difficult to know exactly what life is and what isn't life. Nobody has been able to define it from a scientific perspective. In fact, if you look in the literature, there's probably about 250 years of work where people have off and on tried to produce a definition for life and have been unable to define it.
Mm.
And what they end up doing is just
saying, "You're amazing me here today. I'm enjoying this."
So what they do is just simply say, "Well, all living organisms have these characteristics," but that's not really defining life. It's more describing it.
It doesn't say how it started or.
But where this is significant is, if you don't know how to define it, how do you really know that you've actually created life?
Mm-hmm.
And so when we talk about the work of Jack Szostak, who's done, again, incredible stuff, where he's getting these entities to grow and divide, he can encapsulate molecules in there, he can get them to do some interesting things.
Has he made a cell?
Not really a cell. They call them protocells, but
that's a primitive cell, is it?
Maybe not even a primitive cell.
No.
So it's somewhere between being not alive and being alive. And that's where the inability to define life becomes important, because depending on one definition, maybe it is alive, but depending on another definition, maybe it isn't. So it's important for people to be aware that when they hear claims that we've created life in the lab, nobody really knows what that definition of life is. And so maybe they're just simply exaggerating their accomplishment. Mm. And it makes headlines, it gets publicity, and people then react out of concern for no reason at all.
I've got a question coming on. I've been pondering this. Now, there are big seminars held around the world called the Origin of Life meetings, aren't there?
Yes.
And scientists get together and they talk about, well, we've made this advance and we've made this advance. But I heard a scientist, a well-known scientist, say that they open one door and that leads to another corridor, and they say, ha-ha. They don't say hallelujah, but they say, we've got in this corridor. And then they discover there are lots of other doors.
Yep.
And when they open those doors, this leads to other corridors. Now, atheistic evolutionists teach, now, I'm not a scientist, I'm just trying to get my words together here. They teach that basically there was nothing, and then it became something, and that something wasn't alive. And over a long period of time, out of that which was non-alive, there came something which was alive. And this happened spontaneously by itself.
Yeah.
And then after a tremendous long process taking billions of years, the simple cell became a human being. And here we are today. So that if you leave gases by themselves long enough, they'll become people like you and me, and they'll have television cameras, and they'll be, you know, people like you and me having a good time together, laughing together. But this is nothing like that.
No.
We're not talking about things spontaneously generating.
No, we're not.
We're talking about great corporations, the greatest minds in the world, with the best equipment in the world, playing around with atoms that they never created.
Exactly.
And molecules that they never created. They never made any of that basic stuff.
Exactly.
And they're putting that stuff together, and to this point of time, some of it seems to have some of the minor characteristics of life. But even if scientists, Dr. Rana, even if scientists were able to make something in the laboratory and they said it was living, it's not spontaneous generation.
No, it's intelligent agency.
It's not evolution.
No, it's not evolution at all. It's intelligent design.
Mm.
And so to me, I think, again, the attempts to create life in the lab is one of the most powerful arguments we're going to have.
Absolutely.
That a creator is necessary for
life. I want
the
young people listening to listen up now and hear this. Don't be taken in by the atheists to tell you that it just spontaneously generated. Because it didn't, did it?
No, this is a clear demonstration that spontaneous generation gets you nowhere and nowhere fast.
Mm.
It's only when you have, again, intelligent agency involved that life comes from non-life, if you want to even call what they've done life.
Isn't it amazing that once upon a time, people who believed in spontaneous generation were considered to be barbarians, ignoramuses? That's a pretty good word, isn't it?
Yeah.
Ignorant. Anybody who believed that life came from non-life, once upon a time, people said, that's crazy.
Yeah.
But now it's believed by many people
that
life in some billions of years ago, it spontaneously generated.
Yeah. Yep. And that's exactly where you have to go if you're going to argue that life evolved from non-living matter. It is, in a sense, a form of spontaneous generation, maybe a little bit different than how it was conceived of in the Middle Ages, but nevertheless, it's still a model that's employing spontaneous generation. And again, this work in the lab where scientists are trying to create life is a clear demonstration that
it's
a bankrupt idea.
You've got to have intelligent beings doing this.
Exactly.
And they're not working with original material. They're working with material that somebody put there.
Yes. And they're taking their understanding of how life works and applying that understanding to create life in the lab. They're not conceiving all on their own a blueprint or a strategy for how to make life from non-life. They're borrowing an understanding from that which already exists.
Now, think of me. Think of me as a university student, and I have been bombarded with evolution and other atheistic ideas, or atheistic ideas. You're a scientist. You're a biochemist. You've studied this for many, many years. It is the passion of your life. Tell me, why are you a Christian? Why do you believe in Christ? Why do you believe in a creator God?
Well,
why?
To me, when I look at living systems, mm-hmm. it's not that these systems are complex, which they are. It's they're so elegant. They're so sophisticated. They're so clever in how they operate that to me immediately suggests the mind is involved.
Yes.
And when you look at the way in which scientists try to explain where these systems come from, those explanations are demonstrably unworkable from a scientific perspective, which means there has to be a mind that's behind it all. And as soon as you recognize that, it immediately begs questions like, who is that creator? How do I relate it to him? And the reason I'm a Christian is because once I started asking those questions, as I began to read the Bible, I felt that the Bible provided the best explanation for who that creator is and how I related to him and my desperate need for a savior. So to me, I'm a Christian because I think the evidence indicates a creator exists, and I believe that the Bible...
This is not blind faith.
No, the Bible makes so much sense to me in terms of explaining the human condition and explaining how human beings can be rescued from the predicament that we're in.
You have reasons to believe.
I do. Yes, exactly.
Yes. And the people watching this program today, I want to say to you, you have reasons to believe. There is scientific evidence to suggest that there's a wonderful creator God. And this creator God loved you so much that he sent his own son, Jesus, to die for you on the cross. And because we came from God, one day we're going back to God. One day we're going to be with God in paradise. Please write to me, John Carter, Post Office Box 1900, Thousand Oaks, California, 91358, or write to me at the Terrigal address in Australia. Thank you for joining us today. Dr. Renner, thank you for being a marvelous guest.
Thank you for having me.
We appreciate your work so much. God bless you all, and see you next time. Bye-bye.